are you? Lee, are you ready for us to start?
Okay.
Yes, I am. A call to order the meeting of the Berkeley Lakes City Council on October 16th, 2025. And note for the voice record that we have a quorum. Actually, all of our City Council members are present. Our city attorney is here, our city administrator, and a whole bunch of the public. Are you counting? 24 people. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate people making time to come out on a night like this. I wanted to ask you to make sure your cell phones are quieted. I think that would help. We had a mob of people in here Tuesday, and cell phones were going off, and that was difficult for the poor person that began to ring. I wanted to ask if any of our council members would like to make a motion regarding the agenda. The agenda, as you know, and all the materials related to it were posted 8 days ago, so I hope everybody's had a chance to study not just the agenda, but all the stuff that will be presented tonight. So do I hear a motion regarding the agenda as it's been presented?
Yeah, I would like to make a motion.
Can you turn up the volume a little bit? We're having a hard time hearing that.
Thank you for telling me that, and no, I can't, but let me see if we can got somebody that can. You know, maybe I need to hang over this microphone.
Yeah, just make sure you're speaking into that.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let me organize myself a little bit here. Okay. Thank you for telling me. All righty. Okay. Were you making a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to accept the agenda as submitted.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Risa moves and Rebecca seconds. All in favor? Thank you. The agenda is approved as it was presented. We have no public hearings tonight, but we have lots of things for the public to hear, and we want to hear back from you. The items on the consent agenda are the council meeting minutes from August 18th, the council work session minutes from that same evening, the financial statements from July 2025 unaudited, and the financial statements from August 2025 unaudited. Do I hear a motion regarding the consent agenda?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve all the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Scott. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Okay. Scott moves and Chip seconds. All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. We have no old business tonight, but we are privileged to have with us some pretty outstanding guests, members of the George Piedmont Land Trust Board, Carol Hassel, this nice lady over here, and Dale Higdon. They're going to talk to us about their 22 years of annual monitoring visits to our green space. They come every year. They study it, and I want you to know a little bit about them and why we have such a high opinion of them. In 1998, Carol co-founded the Georgia Piedmont Land Trust, a qualified and nationally accredited land conservation organization. For the past 27-plus years, she's worked to further its mission, the preservation of open and green space in the northern portion of Georgia, protection of water quality in area streams and rivers. That, of course, is particularly interesting to us. Habitat, working land, historical and archaeological features, and education about the values of and tools for land conservation. She presently serves as executive director. Previously, as vice president of administration for the Georgia Wildlife Federation, she had responsibility for human resources and organizational administration and for creation of the Mill Creek Nature Center at the Mall of Georgia. Earlier experience included serving as executive director of the Georgia Environmental Council, an umbrella organization for environmental advocacy and education groups across our whole state. Carol is a Gwinnett County Master Gardener and has actively supported and fostered land conservation and green space in various community and nonprofit activities. She also served a term on the City of Suwanee's City Council, so she knows a little bit about municipal government. She is a Leadership Gwinnett graduate and a member of the charter class for the Institute of Georgia Environmental Leadership. Dale Higdon, waving at you over there, has been on the Georgia Piedmont Land Trust Board since 1998 and currently serves as board secretary. He retired from the Georgia Forestry Commission in 2008 after a 32-year career as a forester, working in forest management and urban forestry in the Atlanta metro area. Dale received a B.S. in Forest Resources from the University of Georgia in 1974 and was a Georgia registered forester until 2019. Berkeley Lake fell in his service area, and he was always a good friend and resource to our city. Much of his work with the State Forestry Agency involved assisting private landowners with forest management advice and providing technical assistance to urban homeowners with tree diagnosis, especially insect and disease problems. His background in timber evaluation and knowledge of the natural resources in Georgia, especially the Piedmont region, provided good experience for work in conservation preservation. Dale is a member of the Society of American Foresters, Georgia Urban Forest Council, Georgia Arborist Association, Georgia Wildlife Federation, and American Chestnut Foundation. He has received the Outstanding Individual Award from the Georgia Urban Forest Council and the Kim Coder Award from the Georgia Arborist Association. I think it would be hard to find any two people that are better suited with their history to advise us about our green space. I think you've all had a chance to read the report, but they have some slides, I believe, to show us. Would you proceed with that, please?
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. Thank you for inviting us and having us to come and give you our perspective about the green space at Berkeley Lake. And as you mentioned, we have indeed been present and walked this property for a lot of years, an awful lot of years. So we did bring a number of slides, and as I go through them, I wanted to start with a kind of a perspective. The picture that is in front of you right now is a picture that was taken from the Forest Stewardship Plan that was updated for Berkeley Lake in 2005, and Dale actually was a part of the professionals who updated that plan. And just for just to orient yourself, that green triangle that occupies the center of the photo and on to the left is the green space as it appeared in 2005, and you can see that the tree canopy is pretty extensive. The initiation and the growth and the maturing of any forest, any healthy forest, begins at one certain point, and that point is a point of disruption. And the city of Berkeley Lake's green space certainly had a point of disruption in 1988 with the tornado. So by 2006, as you can see in the picture there, regrowth had begun. Pines tend to come back early. They're considered to be early pioneers. They're happy to grow in disturbed land of all different types. And so they tend to sprout. A lot of them tend to sprout. And the idea is that over a period of time, the healthy ones survive and the less healthy ones not so much. So So this is the way it looked in 2006. And again, these are from taken, each one of these photos are taken from the visits that we are required to do as a part of the green space conservation easement responsibility. That report that I referred to, the Georgia Forestry Commission's Forest Stewardship Plan, started from a premise, its launching point, and it was this. The Berkeley Lake green space is a rare natural forest in a heavily developed area of Gwinnett County. That's a pretty remarkable endorsement of a fabulous green space and an endorsement by a group of professionals who know what they're talking about. So that's the point of departure that we start from in thinking about the green space now. In August of 2010, the city had commissioned an iTree eco inventory, and that was an effort to try and identify and sort of encapsulate the idea of what was in the woods. And there were some points in that inventory that came out that I thought were pretty important. In the green space at large, the entire green space, they estimated that there were nearly 50,000 trees. And 80% of those trees were less than 6 inches in diameter. And diameter is measured a certain distance from the ground, and it is the diameter of the trunk. So less than 6 inches, 80% of them, that means that was the woods at that point were at a young point in their progression. And it also identified that the tree cover represented 100% of the green space. And that's tree cover in the sense of canopy. And a predominant species at that time was tulip poplar. And tulip poplar is important in this context because it grows big leaves, and therefore it requires a lot of resources, and it tends to provide a lot of shade. The pictures from here on, many of them, not all of them, but many of them, will have been taken in the last quarter of the year. When the organization was founded, we initially limited our monitoring activities pretty much to the last quarter of the year because it was more efficient for us. If there are no leaves on the trees, it's easier to see a tract of land and to identify if there are any problems with it. So many of these pictures will be from the end of the year or toward the end of the year at any rate, and therefore will not the trees will not have leaves on them. But they represent, as we go through this sequence of annual photos, they represent a sequence of evolution for this forest. And maybe it's not so obvious year to year, but over a period of time, it definitely is. So you can see what's happening there. And there are some characteristics about this land that we've taken pictures of that it has in common with the land throughout the green space. One of the characteristics is that there doesn't appear to be a lot of growth at ground level. And I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. There's a reason for that. So it's open. And at this point, you can see that there are a lot of smaller hardwood saplings, and many of them are characterized by the sort of beige-colored leaves that you can see at mid-level there. That's an American beech, and American beech trees, as you know, tend to hang onto their leaves until the next leaves are ready to come out, and then they just drop them all. More of the same, predominantly young growth. There's the American beech tree being very evident there. And the pine regrowth at this stage in the game, after almost 20 years of regrowth, the pines have begun to thin out. The little saplings, the weak ones, have died out. And something similar is going on in that picture in the right, which is all hardwood, which is the hardwood portion of the forest. And there's something additional that's going on in that photo as well, and that is that you begin to see trees that represent varying ages. They're not all saplings. They're not all mature trees. They're a variety of years of age. Same thing here. And this is down, obviously, in the floodplain area. And this is in a portion of the woods where there are no pine at all. And this is just to represent where some of the pictures were taken. The map that you can see there, you obviously can see that the tree cover is pretty pervasive. Now, what's beginning to happen at this stage in the game is that some different kinds of species are beginning to emerge at ground level. And you can see the hardwood saplings that are leafed out, but you also see some native plant species that are herbaceous or ground growing. And there's a reason for that. More young growth, mixed growth, older trees, lots of leaf out in the younger trees. And again, lots of leaves and so on. The ground is very open. And in the picture on the left, the area of green space is beginning to really, you can really see the distinct ages of the trees. More maturation. This is a process of this forest growing up and getting older, and new young saplings coming in and becoming established while the older ones are continuing to grow. But what's happening as that process continues is that the tree canopy is getting more and more complete and is shading the ground more fully during the growing season in the summer, late spring and early summer, and on into the fall, and is shading out the ground. And you can see that very clearly in the map. The blue, that's not really easy to see, but the blue trail there is the path that we took that particular walk. But you can see how the trees are completely leafed out, and this is in November. So, and so here we are at a whole new suite, or what's beginning to be a whole new suite of herbaceous growth plant species that are ground growing or low growing shrubs and so on. And these are plants that are shade tolerant. They are plants that are happy growing in shade. They don't need a lot of sun. And they have begun to replace the species that may have been there earlier when the ground was more open and exposed to sunlight. They are beginning to replace the species that required all that additional sunlight. These varieties are perfectly happy there. So there's nothing wrong with this. It is simply the evolution of a woodland from disruption to early succession to now it's getting to the point where there's more shade cover across the land. And so as the forest matures and as those trees get taller and larger and develop the leaf canopy that they need, the ground level shade increases over a period of time, and that's what I've been showing you. And the transition at the ground level goes from species that could tolerate or that required a fair amount of sunlight to almost entirely species that require or that can tolerate considerable shade. And this is a very normal process. It's called forest succession, and it is exactly what we would expect from a healthy woodland. And I think Dale and I would concur that this is a healthy woodland. And the fact that the ground is open there and that there isn't a lot of undergrowth is totally typical of a hardwood forest like this that has shaded out the ground to the extent that there's no undergrowth that's possible other than shady varieties. And those species, the ferns there and the pawpaw, they have special areas that they prefer for growing. So they're clumped in certain areas, but that's perfectly natural as well. So I think that over the period of years that we've been out here, we've seen a healthy woodland that continues to be healthy and it continues to mature. So I'll let Dale take over and give us some thoughts.
Well, as the mayor said, I've been involved with Berkeley Lake, well, actually, since the early 80s, and I've been on the green space pretty much every year from 97 when you first acquired it. I was contacted by Stuart Levinson, if I'm remembering the name correctly. He was a city councilman. And after the city acquired the property, they wanted to, they wanted to manage it. So there have been two forest stewardship plans, as Carol mentioned, on the property. Forest stewardship plan is a Georgia Forestry Commission created plan, and it incorporates forestry, wildlife, water, soil conservation. Both of the plans that were done for Berkeley Lake, a lot of the input was provided by Dr. Lonnie Barnado, who is now retired. He was a Georgia Extension Service recreation specialist. So he had a lot of impact about the benefits of this green space for possible recreational purposes. But the forest primarily provides benefits in that it's here, you know, it's preserved. And as I said, I have been on almost all the inspections over the last 28 years. And I also helped do the canopy study that Carol talked about. And so I would just agree with what Carol has gone over. It is a healthy forest. You know, you've got various types of forests out there. You've got mature forest, which is typically your white oak, red oak, American beech. And as Carol said, you typically do not have as much undergrowth in those types of environments because they're shaded out. A forest is always changing, and a good illustration of that was when the 98 tornado came through and took a swath of trees out. And in the south, and in this part of the country, whenever you have a disturbance, fire, soil damage, anything like that, you're going to have seed sources coming up. Pines particularly need disturbed soil in order to germinate. That's why you see so many pines coming up. Likewise for sweet gums and tulip poplars. So those are what are called early successional species. Then you'll start to get oaks and hickories and the beech trees. So what you've got at Berkeley Lake, in the area where the disturbance occurred from the tornado, you've got you've got pine trees that came up. But in the other parts of the forest, you've got a more mature hardwood species. And one thing, Carol didn't have it in the program here, but when I was doing the plan, I was able to locate a 1938 aerial photograph, USDA, and it showed that Berkeley Lake was basically a pine forest. Most of the Piedmont area of Georgia had been cut over. It was fields and farms. And so gradually it started coming back either naturally or back in the 50s, a lot of it was planted. So Berkeley Lake was just fields and pine forest. So I'm guessing that these hardwood trees you're seeing out there, most of them are probably less than 100, probably in the 75 to 100 year range. So, you know, I consider it to be a healthy forest. It's there's always changes going on, but I think you can certainly feel good about knowing that you've got a valuable resource in this property having it preserved, because as you well know, there's not a lot of land of this size in the metro area that's been preserved like that. So I think it's a real asset, and so I'm in agreement with what Carol has said about the property out here. We have kept a close watch on it for the past 20 plus years, and it's in very good shape.
Thank you so much, Dale. Do we have any council members that have a question or a comment?
I do.
Okay.
I have one for Carol.
Were you involved in the creation of the Berkeley Lake conservation easement?
I was, yes. As a co-founder of the organization, I was here from the get-go.
Okay.
And so I was involved in it, yes.
Could you describe the process that was used to create that?
The document, the starting point for the document is what we always start with, and that is a template that we use is the conservation easement template. It's pretty standard throughout the world of land conservation, and we had used that as the starting point. There are three key areas in the template that are very important to any piece of property, whether it's a municipal piece of property or a private landowner's. The first of those three key areas is a statement in some fashion or the other of the conservation purposes. The reason that a piece of land can be protected in this manner is that the landowners and the people who are going to protect it are able to articulate what makes it valuable from a conservation perspective. So that's number one, the statement of the conservation values. Number two is a list of prohibited uses, things that should not happen to the property henceforth if the property is to be protected for its conservation values. And generally speaking, they include the kinds of development rights that typically go with property that are invasive or destructive, generally. And then the third key part of the easement is the list of retained rights. And those are rights that the landowner can continue to enjoy and continue to exercise as long as they do not conflict with the purpose of the easement.
Okay, and I have one last question for you. Because it's come up in some of our conversations, can the conservation easement be amended? And if it can or cannot, how would that be done? Basically not.
We are very firm in our belief. In fact, we have a policy that states this. A policy that is generally tracks what is characteristic of the entire land trust community. We have a policy that stipulates that we do not amend easements, except under very, very rare circumstances, and I mean really rare circumstances, and we will not consider amending an easement under any circumstances if it would result in the diminution of the conservation values. So if it's something that would take the protection of the conservation values backwards, we will not go there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else?
Just a quick question about the deadfall. I've seen a lot of dead trees, things on the forest floor. Is that all normal? That's the way it should be?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as trees age, they're going to, some die naturally. In the case of pines, you'll get pot beetle attack. In my career of doing a lot of work around here, I've very rarely seen what I call widespread mortality, you know, disease. So, yeah, natural mortality, and that doesn't mean that, you know, they're all going to die out. I think a lot of what we're seeing out, there are some dead trees or dead fall out in the green space, and they're older hardwoods. Yeah, so that's not an indication of poor health.
No cause for concern. Okay, thank you.
Thank you both. Very much. The next person that's bringing forth a report, I think all of y'all have gotten this both online and there are hard copies as well. The next person doesn't need me to give any long introduction. I know y'all will be grateful for that. Our city attorney, Dick Carruthers, is one of the most widely known and appreciated experts on municipal law in our state, and we have been grateful for him for very, very many years. The council asked him to do what I called a deep dive into anything that related to the possibility of hunting in our city, and that has to be a deep dive because it's affected by overlays of municipal, county, state, and perhaps even federal laws. So we paid him a whole lot of money to study this, and you have all had a chance to read what he has said. How do you want to proceed? Do you want to add anything to this or take questions from the council?
Whichever you think would be best, I can do a short presentation and we'll try and answer.
Why don't you do that? Yeah, because they may want to ask questions after that.
As many of you know, I've been here for some time. And one of the nicest things that happened to me in my little career is in 1992, in August, I was appointed city attorney. And I had just stepped down as Gwinnett County attorney, and I dealt with Berkeley Lake and liked it, and I went off into private practice and was doing this. But one of the fun things for me was, all of a sudden they had a zoning lawsuit, is right on North Berkeley Lake Road, where the current commercial development is, and there was a big dispute over that. And as a result of that, I got to walk the green space, and I thought, how great is this? I mean, how wonderful. And by the way, I had never heard the word green space until we started using it. And I would say, I was all of a sudden accosted by my old friend and your elected official, Dr. Bernard Cohen. And Dr. Cohen came up to me and he said, we got to get that green space. Well, Bernie, how are you going to do that? He said, well, if you can't negotiate it, we're condemning. Okay. So, well, where are you going to get the money? Then we're going to issue bonds. I mean, he was full steam ahead on this. And, of course, I thought he was borderline on all that because, I mean, it was such a huge expense for the city. You know, I guess it was about 62 acres at that time. But it was a lot of money owned by Parsons family from the Hardwicker group that was in Duluth. Anyway, long story short, and thanks to the community and the rest of the council and Dr. Cohen just pushing and pushing, he finally got the Parsons family to basically reconfigure their family trust to be able to sell us the property. And it's been such an asset, probably one of the things that I get most complimented on, not that comments are directed to me, they're directed to the city of Berkeley Lake for having bought it, going out on the limb. And, you know, when you travel from 285 to Gainesville, maybe not that far in Hall County, but you don't see a big piece of green space like this. And it was Bernie's idea not to only have the green space, but to close the door on commercial development because of that shopping center. He wanted everything to stop at PIB for Berkeley. And anyway, the city's to be commended for going ahead with that project through multiple councils and so forth and taking care of it. But as we all know, now the deer live in it, as well as everywhere else in Berkeley Lake. Lois said I took a deep dive into this subject, and I did, but what one finds out, and you never want to do this deep dive without checking the water, but the water's pretty shallow. And by that I mean there is not a lot of law. Lawyers like to look and see what the appellate courts have done and see what they've done with specific ordinances. We don't have any of that. No one's really taken this to the mat to decide what can be done. And when you're deciding what can be done with, for instance, deer overpopulation, as to no one's surprise, you have to find a way to get rid of them. Not going to get many to move away, so it's basically going to be a way of reducing the numbers of the deer. And as a result of that, that gets into hunting and regulated hunting and the mechanism of hunting. And one of the things that makes it so hard for us to try and decide how should we handle deer overpopulation is the fact that this is solely the state's baby. Hunting and wildlife are the state's baby, and they're not going to let you mess with it in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not going to read a bunch of stuff, and it's all in your materials. But one of the code sections that's important in this says, The ownership of jurisdiction over and control of all wildlife is defined in this title or declared to be in the state of Georgia in its sovereign capacity to be controlled, regulated, and disposed of in accordance with this title. All wildlife of the state of Georgia is declared to be within the custody of the department for purposes of the management and regulation in accordance with this title. Except as otherwise provided by general law, the power and duty to promulgate rules and regulations relating to hunting, trapping, and fishing rests solely with the Board of Natural Resources. No political subdivision of the state may regulate hunting, trapping, or fishing by local ordinance. Nothing contained, and this is an important sentence we'll talk about in a minute, nothing contained in this code section shall prohibit municipalities or counties by ordinance, resolution, or other enactment from reasonably limiting or prohibiting the discharge of firearms within the boundaries of the political subdivision for purposes of public safety. So we all know the problems that deer create. And again, if it's created by overpopulation, you're really faced with, well, now what can we do about that? And basically that is regulated hunting. What you will see in a minute, we'll just discuss a couple ordinances by neighboring communities. It's very interesting, and I've talked to their city attorneys, they determined, including Peachtree Corners, which we'll also talk about, they don't mention the word hunting in their ordinance. They only mention the discharge of weapons, that being bows. Discharge of firearms is weapons that shoot, rifles, pistols. It does not include, or so saith the state and the Department of Natural Resources, it doesn't include a jurisdiction's ability to classify regulating bow hunting as firearms. Because if you can classify it as firearms, a city or county can basically say you cannot shoot that firearm within the city, and most of them say, unless there's a danger to persons or property, and it doesn't include what a law enforcement officer can do in the performance of the duty. But what they said was, contrary to popular belief, county and municipal government units are not authorized to regulate hunting. Specific authority regarding regulate hunting is with the DNR board. Local ordinances that regulate hunting include language so broad as to prohibit the lawful discharge of firearms that deliberately prohibit hunting or extend beyond firearms to include archery equipment, or contrary to the authority provided under state law. But to summarize that, basically, you can just say no firing of firearms, pistols and rifles. But you have to say you can't include that in firearms, so you can just say, or it has been argued, that you can just say, well, no bow hunting, can't do that. And you can't say no hunting with bows, but you can't use the H word in any of these. But that's the effect that it has, and that's kind of what we're talking about today. What jurisdictions have tried to figure out is, and it has been requested in conversations in this room, what we want to do is we want to have bow hunting. So it has to comply with all the state requirements. And it can only be on the owner's property or an invitee. Steve says to me, Dick, I want to hunt on your property. And that's right down. I authorize Steve to, you know, this is where the property is, so forth. And he has to carry that around when he hunts. And again, this is regulated by the state. But that is, and that does two things. One, it allows the diminished, you know, the population. It allows, you know, sport for people who enjoy that. It allows a use of the property without, which is acknowledged, so you're not fighting over whether you have to use the property for this or this. And so jurisdictions have tried to enact various regulations, but a lot of them don't have any. So what you find is, for instance, and I have serious questions about this. City of Atlanta says no bow hunting unless you're in a facility, an archery facility. Well, and let me just say this. One of the problems you run into, guess what's never been challenged before? That ordinance. And by the way, if it hadn't been challenged, it's still valid, still on the books. We can argue over what that means. It's clear, for instance, what I just read you, that the DNR doesn't think that you get to do that. The only reason that you're stopping bow hunting is to stop hunting. Many of you are probably aware that the City of Berkeley Lakes ordinance says, guess what you can't do? You can't fire a weapon or a firearm or shoot a bow or a crossbow. And the city attorney at that time was trying to be clever. And so he determined, that was I determined, and recommended in 2013 what you needed to do was to make it so you couldn't do that within 300 yards of a street, a house, anything. So basically you were down to this many places where you could put this. And by the way, the green space, as you know, is no hunting. In addition to the interest in the easement with Georgia Piedmont. So anyway, but you know, that's another thing. Can you do that? I don't know. I'm not sure we can do that. And I'll be recommending that we, the council, look at this to make some changes. But it's still valid right now. It's good news and bad news. The good news, you know, if there's something wrong with it, it's still valid. On the other hand, now we have to go through that, have someone set it aside. You know, my recommendation is we look at it now, because I think it must have been a bad moment when I came up with that. But on the other hand, it's been around for 12 years and nobody fussed at it, so, you know, at least we saved that problem. I wrote in here, therefore the foundation question of the entire issue is whether or not the City of Berkeley Lake can prohibit the discharge of bows and arrows, including crossbows, in the City of Berkeley Lake for purposes of public safety. And let me say in my defense too, one of the things I'd seen I have represented hundreds of police officers in various cases and attended a lot of their training sessions. And a bow and arrow is a fine weapon, but a crossbow is like a .30-06 with bullets. I mean, it's really, in my youth, I spent some time out in the woods, and I mean, the .30-06 will shoot forever, and the crossbow will also shoot forever, and you know, I've seen it go through quarter-inch, eight-inch plywood, and it's really amazing. So I was concerned that you needed to be at least 300 feet away before you, 300 yards away before you unleashed it. So that's one of the things that really bothered me at the time that we did this. So we have. Here's another one. City of Roswell has a permit system, and it's got a two-page ordinance, which, by the way, doesn't mention the word hunting. And they have a permitting process, and they have, you have to ask permission. You have to get a permit in order to have a discharge of a bow and arrow, unless you're in one of these facilities that we talk about. You also have to have a backstop for the arrow to go into to keep it from going off your property. It's somewhat elaborate, with all due respect to my friend, the city attorney of Roswell, but there's a hole in it that is intended to allow for hunting, so they don't have to have the same kind of lawsuits that are you know, that threatened about this, again, never coming to fruition. One of the things that I looked at, which is another, you have read about it in the papers all over the place, Peachtree Corners has been dealing with the same problems that Berkeley Lake has. They both have, the highway to hunting or to hell or something, but whatever it is, running along the river near the bodies of water, the woods and all this stuff, and the deer are just moving. And when they're not moving, I guess they're being frisky because the population is dramatically increasing. And this is just something that, all the citizens, I think, in Berkeley Lake realize. Whether it's a traffic accident or whether the deer are eating shrubs, eating plants, eating bushes, eating the underbrush in the green space, whether or not that's a significant problem or not, it's all of a sudden you have a real problem. They have been talking about this, looking at this. In fact, I think they're in the latter stages. I won't get off into this, we'll touch on it for it, and I'll shut up in a second here, but the culling programs, or there are culling programs that do that. Unfortunately, the city of Berkeley Lake's only place for culling is probably the green space. It doesn't look like that's going to be available. So again, that turns you back to making it at least some relief for individual property owners to make their land available for hunting, again, during hunting season, not just whenever they want to. You have to get the appropriate permits and all of that. But they came up with an ordinance that it's only three paragraphs. So let me read it to you. I have spoken at length with David Rhodes. I do some work for Peachtree Corners too. And this is called discharge of weapons. It shall be unlawful to discharge any firearm in the city of Peachtree Corners. It's clear that you can do that. Again, keeping your eye on the word firearms. This section shall not be construed to prohibit any officer of the law from discharging a firearm in the performance of his or her duty, or to prohibit any citizen from discharging a weapon when lawfully defending persons or property, including without limitation domestic pets or destroying a dangerous wild animal. This section shall not apply to BB guns or air pellet rifles or authorized indoor shooting ranges. It shall be unlawful to discharge any bow or crossbow within the city of Peachtree Corners. Sounds good as the general rule, but this is the exception. This section shall not apply to persons discharging a bow or crossbow on that person's own property or with written permission of the owners of any property where such discharge of any bow or crossbow will occur. Discharging any bow or crossbow upon the property of another or causing an arrow or bolt to cross the property line of another without first obtaining written permissions of such property owner shall be considered a violation of this section. So what did we accomplish? You can't just fire them wherever you want, fire the bow and arrow wherever you want to, or crossbow. But it allows you to discharge. It doesn't say anything about whether you're discharging at a deer or not, but that's set in here. I mean, that's within the text that's permissible. And so you can fire it on your own property, you can give an invitee, or you can be someone else's invitee to discharge it on their property with the written permission. And so therefore, you can hunt. And that has the added benefit too of not only you're doing your part or whatever part you want to play in reducing the overpopulation, but you get to use your property, which is, again, in a way that is permitted, or at least largely permitted by state law. This ordinance has been in place now, I think it's 5 years. I've got the press release somewhere in here. Haven't had a single problem with it. Or if they have, it hasn't risen to the attention of the city attorney. And we certainly don't have any court cases. And I think as the council and y'all look at this, I think it may be a middle ground, you know, to allow some hunting, but you're still keeping it safe. And you still have to comply with all the hunting regulations and so forth. Now I think this also, I'm pretty sure this would pass muster. So as we look at this issue, you know, you've got no bow hunting, permit systems, this, 300 yards, or, what is it? Yeah, 300 yards. Nothing, none of these have been ruled that they're wrong. I think that this is probably the easiest one to defend, but that may not be the point of this discussion. Two things in the culling. One thing you can do is you can cull in non-hunting season because it's a public safety thing. It has, you haven't seen, and I'm sure from watching your heads nod, a lot of you are up on this issue, but if you haven't seen the figures, I think there are like 160,000 deer strikes on cars in Georgia. I mean, it's phenomenal how many there are.
How many appropriate?
You know, I don't know that.
Those are only ones reported.
Well, and that's true too. It certainly is an issue. And when DNR has this program where they work with the community, and you've got to do one of the things Peachtree Corners has been doing, and they have some of this stuff published, I think, on their website, but it has the deer populations by taking fixed cameras and putting around different properties, and then they move them after like 2 weeks, and then they move over to see how many deer are moving through. And I think the overpopulation is pretty clear that you can put that together. But again, it would have to be the city doing it, and even then that wouldn't do it, because even if the Piedmont Land Trust, or the Georgia Piedmont Land Trust, was willing to listen to it, my understanding is that their governing rules do not permit them to amend the language in there is can't destroy any fauna, no animals, pretty much designed for deer. But, they can't even agree to it if they wanted to. So that's going to make it, that again puts more emphasis on the individual property owners to have, you know, a miniature overpopulation control on their property at least, and at least during hunting season. Anything that we do will require an amendment, I think, to the existing ordinance, and that's kind of where we are. The one other thing I will add is, not only can we not regulate hunting, just give me one second, but the rules and regulations, you know, we can't do any changes. And you may have seen some of these. You know, Georgia Code regulates unlawful to hunt deer at night, hunting hours, legal weapons, hunting while under the influence prohibited. And here's one that we talked about in some of these meetings. Unlawful to hunt on or discharging weapon on or across a public road. So you shoot your arrow, goes across a public road. How do you determine that? And who? I mean, we can't even enforce that. It's strictly for the game warden. They're tough to get your hands on a game warden when you need one. Here's one I couldn't even find a regulation on. I've got game warden Brock Hoyt was quoted by Georgia Public Broadcasting as saying, if a wounded deer wanders onto another property, the hunter cannot cross over to that land without seeking permission to retrieve it. But I think these are meant to protect the rights of the property owners, and I guess of the owner and citizens. But some of them are going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of work to comply with those. Anyway, that's what I was able to find out in this deep water. I know there's not a lot of questions answered in here. Yes, sir.
Well, are two things. One, I would like to find.
Wait a minute. Well, let's stop for a minute. If it's not time for citizens to make comments or ask questions at this time, when you do, you've got to come up to the podium and say who you are and what your address is. So I think we need to keep, this is not a town hall meeting, this is a city council meeting. So we have procedures that we need to follow.
We do. And I want us to have enough time for y'all to be able to come up and comment. So let's try to be organized about how we do that. Dick, is there any other brief comment you want to add before I open this to the council?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Council members, do any of you have?
I have one. Dick, I just wondered, when you were talking about hunting being regulated by the city, I just quickly looked up the Georgia State 25-26 season dates for archery, and they are from September 13th to October 10th, and then they talk about also limits on it, and no more than 10 can be antlerless, and does culling, is it an exception to all of these rules?
I believe that it is.
And that you have
culling has to be in a program with DNR.
But what about somebody getting a bow and arrow and shooting it on their property? Do they have to comply with the season?
Yeah.
They don't.
But if they're going to be shooting at a deer, They have to come
up. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. If you have a deer on your property and you want to shoot it and it's not within archery season in the state of Georgia, are you allowed to shoot it?
I don't know what archery season is.
I'm telling you.
But hunting archery season, yes, it has to be in there. That's why they announce it, because they're slightly different than, well, they're actually dramatically different rather than firearm hunting.
Well, the archery season in Georgia appears for 2025 to 2026, from September 13th to October 10th. So if you're not within that, you then can no longer hunt deer on your property.
All right, let's hang on, please. Let's try to stay orderly here.
Okay.
Did you get what you wanted?
Yes.
Okay. Do you still have a comment or question?
I do. So I'm concerned about safety of our citizens. And so were you saying that even if you're hunting, bow hunting on your own property, do you need to be certified? Or if it's on your property, you're allowed, whether you've got training or not, you're allowed to bow hunt on your private property?
You're allowed to bow hunt for whatever is in season that can be killed by a bow on your property. But you still have to have a license.
Okay. And then my next question is, how is the city going to police all this? You know, how can we police whether you're on your own property or whether you've gone over to your neighbor's property without their permission? How are we going to police if you've accidentally been bow hunting on your own property and now I've got an arrow in my house, or I've got a dead deer in my yard because it got wounded on somebody else's private property and now it's come on my property? I mean, how are we going to police all of that?
I understand that that's a game warden offense, and you're going to have to call the game warden and tell them what happened and see if they can get them out here.
Any other council question or comment before I open it to the public? Okay. We do have at the top of all of our agendas, I can tell some of y'all are anxious to participate here. Citizens are encouraged to offer comments on issues of concern as agenda items are reached and at the end of the meeting for all other issues. Please limit citizen comments to 2 minutes. Longer citizen comments are welcome in writing and will be added to the official record of this meeting. So, if you would like to make a comment, please come forward and, yes sir, come on, and say your name and your address. And stick to 2 minutes, if you would. I will raise my hand like this when you get close, just so I won't...
Skip Dahlstrom, 4362 River District Way, Berkeley Lake, Georgia.
Thank you, sir.
First off, the bow season goes through the end of rifle season, which is well into January. I think January 12th. I'm not sure of the date off the top of my head, but it's in there. But you can bow hunt all during rifle season. So bow hunting is already open. It continues. Second, if you shoot a deer across a road with a bow or a gun or anything else, that's illegal, not for your arrow to fly across or whatever, but you can't shoot across a public road. So just to answer the question you had before, or we're talking about. And as far as a deer running onto somebody else's property, you have to get permission. You can shoot on your property or property you have permission on, but if the deer happens to run someplace else, you have to get permission, or you can't go retrieve the deer, which then you could end up with a dead animal in your yard, which would not be good. But that's kind of the way it goes. And the DNR is in charge of all that. If you shoot a deer on somebody else's property without permission, then you're poaching, and that's illegal. So just to answer a couple of quick questions,
That was very brief, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, anybody else? Name and address.
My name is Laura Lehman. I live at 106 Little Ridge Road. And my property, like many others, is heavily wooded, heavily deer trafficked. And my concern is I'm a dog owner, and I've lived here for 10 years. I've been an English Mastiff owner for 20 years, and I know my dog's color. I know my dog's size. I know their gait. However, on many occasions when I've looked out a window, walked on my property, I have wondered, did I let the dog out? Because at a brief glance, they do look similar. And I'm someone who owned these dogs, this breed, for 20 years. There's the back of a deer last night. There's the back of Sherman. I also live on a really unique property. It is under the ground. This is the view from my roof. These are my dogs. I'm concerned that the view from a tree stand, if there were one, I don't know how this is going to be planned to be done. I'm more confused than I was before now. But I also don't know who's going to be hunting. Who will do this? Because you have a hunting license and you live in Georgia, you can come and hunt deer. My property is unique. Who is to say that maybe my next door neighbor gave you permission? I don't know how you hunt. I don't know your skill set. I'm not comfortable with it. I don't think it's safe. I don't think changing this ordinance haphazardly and without a whole lot of research and more input from citizens is a good idea. It makes me very nervous. I think it's a public safety risk. I do agree we have a major deer problem. I don't disagree with that. But I think we have to do a lot of serious thinking, because I would want to know if a deer were wounded or killed, who's going to come take care of that on my property if I didn't give that written consent? Who's going to come get that carcass? Because I'm not paying for it, because I don't support this. And if somebody's going to kill one of my animals accidentally, how is that taken care of? Those are my concerns. Yes. Do we have a major overpopulation problem? Yes. Is this the solution? I think it needs a lot more thought.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Al Work. I live at 4204 Dogwood Bend Park in River District. I think that the explosion of the deer population is a problem that is going to continue to get worse and worse. It's untenable. There's no ideal solution to this problem, but I think something needs to be done. I've been hunting for 25 years. I think in my experience in 25 years hunting in Georgia, Alabama, and South Carolina, I've seen a group of 10 deer, maybe twice. I had 20 deer behind my house sometimes last winter. I regularly see 10 to 12 deer. I saw 6 fawns in my neighborhood, in my general area, and that's just a small portion of what's born this year. The population is exploding. There has to be something done about it. Again, there's no ideal solution here, but I think we need to take some kind of action. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else?
John Tavoline, 10 Lakeshore Drive. So I just, as a longtime hunter, for at least, 50 plus years, I wanted to address the lady who spoke just before, because a non-hunter doesn't necessarily understand the sort of the rigorous thinking behind a serious hunter. You know, to even shoot at anything without seeing its head, I think that hunter should lose his license. Because it's very irresponsible, and all serious hunters always make sure that they have a backstop. You don't fire a rifle, you don't fire an arrow without knowing that you have a backstop. So, dog owners don't need to be concerned about this, because if you have serious hunters, and there are not going to be, and there are a number of serious hunters around this in this city, and we act very according to very strict behaviors. So I understand the potential concern, but as a hunter and potential, deer killer here, I can certainly assure you that is not likely to ever happen. That's it.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Barry Sinek. I live at 3910 Berkeley View Drive in Miramont. Been here 23 years. I'm no expert. I'm no biologist. I'm not a forester. I'm just a citizen here, just offering up a comment. I've got a lot of questions. This is, at the last 6 months, this has been a very passionate, obviously a very passionate on both sides, this topic. Again, I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to just keep it to one comment, and that is, based on everything that we've heard tonight, from the lawyer, et cetera, I would implore the City Council consider some sort of formal deer management committee to dig into this even deeper, and so we can come up with some sort of formal plan. Something obviously needs to be done. It's not just Berkeley Lake. It's not just the green space. It's everywhere. It's Peachtree Corners, Johns Creek. It's all over. So something needs to be done. So I would ask the council to consider a some sort of formal deer management committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Hang on just a second, John. We got Karen up here.
Good evening. Karen Geiger, 630 Lakeshore Drive. I really have a question for the forester and the president. Is that possible during this comment period?
Well, it's for comments. So I hope we can get out in time enough that we can still talk with each other for individual questions. Did you have a comment you wanted to make?
Well, I really needed to know more information about how they thought the green space was doing, so I guess I'll just have to talk to them individually, but it's a shame of everyone else can't hear the answer.
I think they've already answered that, have you not?
No, not, well. My question was, what would the forest look like when with an overpopulated deer? I mean, if the forest had an overpopulation of deer, how would we know that? What would we be looking for? So if the review didn't have anything to do with whether deer are damaging the green space, we should not be taking that into consideration?
John, you're up.
Hi, I'm John Hominek. I live at 566 Lakeshore Drive. And my first comment is that I hit a deer back in January on Peachtree Industrial. And we do have an overpopulation problem, and they're coming into people's yards and things. And we just put up a 5-foot fence all around. They are jumping over the fence, but not as frequently. We don't have as much traffic as we once did. I'm curious, and this may be more of a question as to a comment, is it illegal for people to feed deer in Berkeley Lake?
Which
there are people that do that. We know that. And another comment or question would be, with the property that the HOA owns, would that be a property that could be a target area for culling, as they would be the property owner? Thank you.
Thank you. That we can check into that for you. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Steve.
Steve Seitz, 34 Lakeshore Drive. I acknowledge being on the deer committee and helping out and gathering information. We did an ad hoc survey here earlier in the year that was shared with a lot of people. I believe it should have been shared with the city council. But it is, as it can advise, this is a very difficult situation. There's not one realistic answer based on the information we got from Ben McClure when we did the meeting at Pickneyville. I think one good thing is that Peachtree Corners is taking the steps to try to evaluate, understand the population. We should try to be doing the same thing here at the appropriate time. But the committee that we are working on, which is an ad hoc committee, which Barry alluded to, that we hope that the council would support putting something more formally together, is to go ahead and gather information, gather data, put together FAQs, try to educate everybody on all the different issues so that we're all on the same level. Obviously, a lot of people within the city, they've got staff shortages and stuff. So the volunteers that are willing here to support and work in conjunction with the city, I think, would be a good thing for the betterment of the community and be able to go ahead and work to try to find a final solution.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
at Rex Spittler, 3825 Brookview View Drive. I think we all recognize that the, first of all, I want to compliment the Brookview Lake, the city of Brookview Lake, all the property homeowners in Brookview Lake for having an environment that is so fruitful and productive that we have wildlife that is willing to come into the area. So obviously we're taking really good care of our property. So thanks for being good stewards of the earth. I think we all recognize that deer, since there's a lot of concern about deer, is a larger problem inside of the state of Georgia. And as such, a small city as ourselves trying to do something in isolation would have limited results in that deer are migratory and they seek out those garden spots, Berkeley Lake being one of those garden spots. So if we eliminate the deer one season, then the next season we're going to have more deer because the other surrounding locales are not doing anything about the deer. So I don't know if a study needs to be done to determine what is the migratory range of deer and developing a plan to deal with all of the municipalities within that migratory range for us to have any real effect on dealing with a long-term issue with the deer. So unless we do that, we're just going to have to be, I think we're throwing a pebble into a pond. So we just need to be careful of that. Secondly, and this comment goes to Dick, be careful about making generalization comments. I understand the comment about 160,000 deer being killed via traffic accidents here in the in Georgia, but we need to know how many are dealing with us here in this local area to be of a concern to us, as opposed to being a rural area out in some other small, county that's out away from any distance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else? We got more on our agenda, so
I have one more question.
Okay,
for
go ahead. Dick, I had one more question for you.
All right.
But subdivision covenants can overrule hunting requirements of the state. That is the only thing. So if we did have neighborhoods that didn't want to allow hunting, or bow hunting even, that they could still restrict it? Okay.
And many of the covenants do so provide.
Okay. Lee, do you want to talk to us briefly about the proposed budget, please?
Sure. It's a lot to follow. O25-259 is the proposed budget for 26. This measure, as presented, anticipates no increase in the real property tax millage rate for 2026 over the rollback rate for 2025, and is presented for first read consideration after having been reviewed and recommended by the Finance Committee. Staff requests that you schedule a public hearing to receive citizen comments to be held on November 20th.
Thank you. You have all received a copy of this budget that's being proposed and had time, I'm sure, to study it. I just would like to add that the budget was also carefully studied by our Citizen Finance Committee. A week or so ago, when they met with me, our city administrator, and city treasurer, the committee members had no objections to this budget. I think that will be significant to y'all. During that meeting, we talked about the reserves, which have accrued slowly over years as a result of the pattern that we've had of moving any money left over in a budget line to reserves rather than finding something else to spend it on. I know from talking with officials of other municipalities that the latter is sometimes, perhaps often, what happens elsewhere. Our management of money has been extremely conservative relative to other cities, and I'd be happy to discuss that in more detail with you at some point if you'd like, but No comparisons with other cities are relevant, as I'm sure you know, unless that city has the total responsibility for a high-hazard dam. When our dam was damaged by a storm in September 2009, it took a little over $5 million to fix it. Fortunately, after much time and effort, we were able at that time to obtain partial support for the repair from FEMA and GEMA. I do not believe we can count on that in the future, based on multiple conversations being had now at the federal level about eliminating FEMA. And I don't believe we can expect that we will not continue to have very strong storms in the future. Climatologists are predicting that they will get worse. Fortunately, our reserves are now approaching the former $5 million repair bill. Not quite there yet, and of course future costs will have risen, but the financial management that has gone into this accrual over time is a real achievement. However, there are other concerns that must also be factored into any consideration of reserves. The Finance Committee discussed other risks, like cybercrime, for example. The City of Atlanta has had to pay large amounts in ransom for their data twice recently in order for the city to continue to function. There are lawsuits and all kinds of unexpected eventualities. I told our city treasurer just after this meeting that with his support and that of our city council, I would like to ask our Citizen Finance Committee to do a brief, high-level study of what risks to our city should be considered in a reasonable, responsible preparation. I want also to point out to our citizens in general, are now exploring the possibility of using some of our reserves to affect developments in our commercial and industrial areas, thus protecting the rest of our city. The process of making sure that all of our citizens have a chance for input into those very important decisions will take time. What they decide may take money. Ultimately, how all this develops and how all of our money is spent will be decided by our city council. So I bring before you tonight my suggestion to consult our finance committee about risks and bring that back to you for your consideration and ultimately for your decision. There is one other factor related to budgets that I want to share here. Council members will remember receiving a report from me in July about personnel issues. I'd like to read some of that into the record here so that our citizens will also be aware. This is a quote. I do not usually record things for you that I learn at mayor meetings, but I thought this was important enough to write up my notes and share it. This is taken from a meeting with Greg Wilson of the University of Georgia Carl Vinson Institute of Government. Significant points were as follows. 85% of surveyed Georgia cities say it is very hard for them to attract and maintain staff. The main reason given for staff leaving is compensation. The situation is expected to get worse because in Georgia, the average municipal employee age is in the 50s, which is higher than the national average age. Aside from pay being a top challenge, very few cities have flex work options. The ones that do have been pleased. 30% allow flex hours, and 10% allow telework. It was emphasized that cities need a succession plan. Small cities especially have no bench. and therefore losing a valued employee can be devastating to a small city like ours. There is no appropriate candidate to report to promote from within, and it's very hard to find competent municipal employees from outside. The Georgia Municipal Association, having been made aware of these concerns, did a needs assessment and has created a workforce development council, but it is in its early stages. Cities are advised to look at their whole package of compensation, including benefits, and to consider internships. The parting emphasis was, quote, "This is going to get worse because of demographics that are already clear to people who are paying attention," end quote. I share this with you tonight because our Berkeley Lake citizens are unusually good at paying attention. Citizenship has its own responsibilities, and I will continue to try to support you, all of you, in fulfilling those to the benefit of the city that we all love. I'm going to introduce to you, if you don't already know, now for a brief comment, our city treasurer. John, do you want to say anything? John Pendleton?
Sure, do you want to go up to the dais?
Please.
Thanks, Lois. And I just want to express my appreciation for giving me the opportunity to be the treasurer and commend you for forming the Citizen Finance Committee. You don't have to do that. And I also want to commend you for listening to our advice, because as you know, I made two recommendations to you. One, you know, that we really do need to think about succession planning. And two, we needed to identify the purpose of our reserves, which have been growing. At that point, you said, okay, smart guy, help me out with that. And so I started looking and have done a cursory review about this. There's really three buckets for reserves. There's the money you need to sort of manage your day-to-day cash, right? A couple, 3 months back, and that's important. We all need that, right? And then there's the rainy day fund, which literally we've had a rainy day here, so we know what that can mean, okay? And then there's investments, development fund, that kind of thing. The middle one is what we'll focus on. We'll try to do, because when I started looking into how you go about this, step number one was do a risk analysis. I don't think we'll come out to a point estimate for what we should have, but I do think we can give you a range of what the risks are. Lee and Tom Roser before her did some work with Georgia to start that process, and it's not just the dam, as you said, and it's not just cybercrime, it's the spillway and a million other things that if we get a foot of rain like they did in North Carolina, we could have a big problem, and it wouldn't just be, and it's things that we don't imagine. So we look forward to doing that, and we'll do it expeditiously, and I don't know what else you want me to cover, but that's...
No, that I appreciate that a lot, and I just want to ask in conclusion while you're here, if the council will support what I asked you just a minute ago, the suggestion that I'm making that I asked John and the Citizen Committee to look into a risk analysis for our reserves. And in the meanwhile, that we continue the very careful management of our money that has allowed us to accrue what we have thus far, with the thought that mainly what we've been thinking, of course, was about the dam. But there are, as we're discovering, other risks that are very significant and in my view would be irresponsible for us not to consider. Are y'all okay with that?
Absolutely.
Is that unanimous?
Yeah. Can I make a comment?
Sure.
I 100% agree with that, because we cannot assume that we're going to continue to have SPLOST money coming in. We've been lucky that the county citizens have constantly voted, you know, for each new SPLOST, but I think every time it becomes a little harder and harder to get that vote. And then there's also state and federal monies that we've gotten awarded once in a while to do infrastructure type of work like roads. But I don't think people really understand how very expensive infrastructure is to repair and maintain, and let's not even talk about if we have to replace. So I think it's really important that we get an updated reserve study.
Any other council comments?
Okay.
Thank you, John. Do we have any citizen comments about that? Okay, I'm hurrying on since we're in a hurry and nobody raised their hand. All right, in response to this proposed budget, do I hear a motion regarding O25-259?
I'd like to make a motion to place O-25-259 on an ordinance to establish the budget for the year 2026 to repeal conflicting ordinances, to provide for an effective date and for other purposes on first read, and to schedule a public hearing on the matter for Thursday, November 20th at 8 p.m.
Do I hear a second?
I'd like to second it.
Okay, Rebecca moves, Barbara seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you, that's unanimous. Lee, talk to us, please, about the audit, Malden and Jenkins' proposal.
Yes, ma'am. So Jimmy Whitaker, who has been the auditor who performed the last several audits for the city, has retired. Before you is a proposal from Malden and Jenkins for preparation of the city's 2025 audit at a cost of $17,500.
Do I hear such a motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to accept the Malden and Jenkins proposal for the 2025 audit.
Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Chip moves, Reese seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. We have a change order to consider. Lee, talk to us about that, please.
The change order before you is for work to repair a catch basin in Berkeley Walk. It increases this year's drainage improvement project cost by $2,500 for a total project cost of $302,316. The cost of the change order is within the $29,982 of contingency funding that was originally approved for the project.
Do I hear such a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the 2025 CIPP Stormwater Project Change Order 1 in the amount of $2,500.
Do I hear a second?
Second that.
Barbara moves, Scott seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. Are there any public comments that have not already been made? Okay, hearing none, I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Okay, do I hear a second?
I second it.
Okay, Rebecca moves, Chip seconds. All in favor? Thank you, we are adjourned. Thank you for coming.